welcome to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. I'm your host, Jenny Rempel, and I am joined in studio today by Cynthia.
Hello.
And Jackie.
Hello.
And Allison is here operating the board.
Hi there.
It's Alyssa and Tim are away today. Today's show will feature a recap of the recent animal advocacy camp held here in Vancouver at the Croatian Cultural Center. We will have a review from our hosts and some clips from the keynote speakers, who included photojournalist Joanne MacArthur, who's featured in the Canadian documentary The Ghost in Our Machine, and Sarah Dubois, who is BCSPCA's chief scientific officer. Coming up for you in the second half of the hour, we have an interview with vegan singer and guitarist Mercedes Arnhorn of Canadian pop-punk band Courage My Love. She will be chatting with us about music, veganism, and Courage My Love's Juno nomination for Breakthrough Group of the Year. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This week, we are also featured on a special second broadcast on Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Animal Voices encourages the movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy, and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. Every week, we are here bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on CFRO 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing.
Yeah, so last weekend, we, all of us, I believe, yes, attended Animal Advocacy Camp, which was, I think it was the third annual, correct me if I'm wrong, Animal Advocacy
Camp. You're wrong.
Is it the fourth? Yeah.
Fourth or fifth?
Okay.
I think it's the fourth. I've only been to three.
Wow.
Yes, it was my third.
I've been to two, and I think this year it went really well. We had four amazing keynote speakers. We had Joanne MacArthur, which Jenny mentioned earlier, and she is an award-winning photojournalist, as well as the subject of the film Ghost in Our Machine, and she has a book that was recently published in December called We Animals, and that is an amazing book, just basically highlighting all the photos that she's taken. We also had Dylan Powell, who is one of the co-founders of Marineland Animal Defense League and Live Free Collective, and Dylan is an activist, both animal and eco, as well as he's very passionate about building coalitions with other social justice movements, and we will have the pleasure of speaking with Dylan on next week's show. And also, we had Sarah Dubois. She works for BCSPCA. She is the wildlife advisor. And she was talking about all sort of wildlife-related issues that many people in the animal rights community don't necessarily think about, but they are important. Our wild animals are as equally as important as the ones that are, unfortunately, in not so pleasant situations due to humans. And then we also had Lisa Hutchin, and she is the executive director of the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. And she was just talking about the various issues that small animals, particularly rodents, deal with because of humans and because of breeding and those types of scenarios and where they end up afterwards. So it was a great weekend, not alone just from the speakers, but we also had some great breakout sessions. And how that works is basically anyone that attends Animal Advocacy Camp can lead a talk. I led one on unity in the animal rights movement. I attended one on prisoner abolition, which was very interesting. A lot of information.
What is prison abolition?
It was just basically talking about the relationship, like the similarities between animals kept in captive environments and prisoners kept in captive environments, and how a lot of the times, you know, things could be worked out without causing someone to be incarcerated. And it's just basically a way to silence people in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it was really interesting about also relating it to the workers that work in slaughterhouses and prisoners, how sometimes they do bad things, but doesn't make them bad people, which was a really interesting talk. So I went to that as well. I really enjoyed it. Learned a lot.
I just wanted to talk a bit about the organization of the event. So it was a two-day event, and it was very, very well organized. I'm not just saying that because I was involved with organizing, but I didn't do most of the work. But great congratulations to Glenn Gates, who actually spearheaded it. He's the mastermind behind this, and Willow, who did a ton of work, too, and Darren as well.
Anyways, and they're with Liberation BC.
That's right. Yeah, but anyone can help. I'm not, like, on their board of directors, and actually neither is Glenn anymore. Anyone can help. I just decided I wanted to help, so I put the food together, as I was telling you before, and I organized the food sponsors in the morning. We had yummy free food in the morning, and then I organized the after party afterwards, which Cynthia won a prize to.
Yes, I won, and I was just saying before how I never win anything, and I won the $50 Gray's gift certificate, so I'm going to be going to Gray's for dinner soon, and it was great after party. Joanne MacArthur was there, who I can now say is my friend, which makes me really excited. But yeah, we all had dinner together, and they had a special set menu for us at a discounted price, and there was also discounted drinks if you drink, and we all just got together and chatted, and there was a group of ladies who came from Seattle, and they were there as well, so it was nice to talk to them and talk in a different environment, and it was just a great time, so I recommend everybody to go next year.
There was even some people from Florida, and like people came from far to attend this event. I was pretty
surprised. It's a happening event, and for people who don't know, we call it an unconference. What does that mean? It means that you, the people who attend, put together the conference as you go along and as you get there. So what we did was sort of it did have some structure. So to provide some structure, we had the opening and closing speakers at the beginning and the end of both days. Excellent speakers, as we've already said. And I think that really was a great sort of like opening and ending to both days, and it did provide sort of just that structure that you kind of do need in a conference setting. But however, for the rest of it, it was up to the attendees to decide what to talk about, what sessions to put on. Some people came with a PowerPoint presentation all prepared and everything, and they knew that they were going to put on this workshop, and they had it all in mind. In that, I attended one actually put on by Darren Chang and Wilson Wong, and they had a great PowerPoint set up for direct action that they were speaking about. And then just as an offshoot from that workshop, someone there said, why don't we just do a direct action today instead of next week at Chipotle? And Wilson's like, oh, I don't have my signs today. Well, let's do it tomorrow. And that's what happened.
Yeah, so it was great. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard about UBC Activists for Animals, regular demonstrations that they do at Chipotle, basically entering the store, doing speak outs, talking about Chipotle and how they exploit animals.
And the
humane meat myth that they perpetuate. And just, basically providing outreach as well as challenging what Chipotle's claims are. And so it was very interesting. Usually it's about 5 to 6 people, sometimes 10. We had 25 people, which was really powerful and really amazing, and it sent a pretty pretty clear message to them, I think, which is great. I also wanted to speak too briefly about Dylan Powell's speech. Often, I think he was just surprised at the amount of positivity that he received at his talk, because it is often directing criticism towards the animal rights movement in some ways or some tactics. Maybe that's not the right choice of words, but basically criticizing certain things that animal rights activists may do or may miss out on. And he got a standing ovation, and he mentioned quite a few times how surprised he was at that response. And I think that actually inspired quite a few activists to do breakout sessions related to the talk, which was really interesting and really exciting.
Definitely. We had a lot of excellent breakout sessions as well. Those were the workshops/talks/discussions. You could make it whatever you want. You didn't have to have a PowerPoint. You could just think of it like right then, like, okay, this person inspired me, Dylan's speech. I want to talk about this, an offshoot about what he was speaking about. And that happened.
And it was really cool.
Great time for networking. The brown bags where you put your ideas in, like, so we had this brown bags table that we do every year. If you want to, this is how the chicken vigils on Fridays were started. Someone said, put on the brown bag, who wants to do chicken vigils? And people put in their names, and then you grab the bag at the end of the day, and then that sort of gets your project started, and that has happened.
And speaking of Dylan Powell, he's part of Marineland Animal Defense, and speaking of marine animals, today...
Oh yeah, we did No Whales in Captivity had a protest at the Vancouver Aquarium, which a few of us attended. And yeah, it was great. Of course, I don't know if you remember from November, I and my friend Corey organized a protest at the Vancouver Aquarium because they were doing yoga there, and No Whales in Captivity organized a protest again today because it seems like they are doing yoga again at the aquarium. So it was great. A group of 10 or so activists got together and stood outside the aquarium. Then it was pouring rain, but they stood there for 2 hours. I was only there for the second half. It was great. And Jackie, I think you were there at the beginning. They turned away a couple people.
Yeah, it was good. Some people were turned away. Some people got a little bit, angry, but that happens with activism. But mostly positivity and people just kind of asking questions or, hesitating when going in, which was, it was a great demo, I think.
Yeah, and I'll be holding another one for their second round of yoga and at the aquarium with the belugas, so April 25th. So look out for that.
And Allison's got some more news stories for us now.
Yes, so you are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. So let's talk about aquariums, and there have been so many protests against aquariums lately. Just recently, there was a school trip canceled at Marineland after a complaint from a mom from Hamilton, Ontario. Jennifer Jameson's kids won't be making school trips to Marineland in Niagara Falls anytime soon, and neither will any other students from their class. This mother has successfully petitioned Mountain View Elementary School not to go ahead with a field trip to the beleaguered amusement park, and she's hoping to convince the public school board to follow suit and ban the trips there altogether. She says this is not some hippie bandwagon stunt. I am a mother who is truly concerned for and dedicated towards the welfare of animals. I want my children to live a compassionate lifestyle and for society to stop viewing animals as just another social norm. There's nothing educational about using animals for entertainment. So how did this happen? Jameson first heard about her 9-year-old son's field trip just before the March break and immediately sent an email to his teacher hoping to change her mind about the destination. And she said she was delighted when her son's teacher responded by saying she had decided to scrap the outing and find an alternative. So that's what happens. The school itself won't be making any decisions about banning future trips to Marineland, but the school board said in an email that it didn't approve any trips to Marineland last year due to concerns, in quotes there, air quotes. They, however, didn't elaborate on what those concerns were, but they did say that they do listen to the parents. The parents are their clients, right? And they want to keep the parents happy. And I think if it's something just as frivolous, which I think it is, as going to Marineland to watch these animals as a spectacle, they're going to be canceling more and more trips to Marineland in one of these days. It was said at the animal advocacy camp that in 50 years, Marineland will be shut down. There won't be any Marineland or in SeaWorld and all those aquariums.
Yeah,
hopefully a lot sooner than that. So speaking of aquarium protesting, last Sunday, 11-year-old Andre Nair organized a peaceful protest against keeping cetaceans in captivity. He did this after seeing the documentary Blackfish, which details the plight of orca whales in captivity, as you all know. And seeing this film made him decide that keeping these mammals away from their natural habitat is wrong. So this was at the Vancouver Aquarium. Andrew and his supporters stood outside the aquarium entrance holding up protest signs and handing out pamphlets to passersby. And I just wanted to bring this up just to show what children are doing, and children are empowered. They're watching films like Blackfish and becoming educated and saying, I do not support this. I do not want to stand for this. And they're putting an end to it. Do we have time for one more story? That would be okay. One more story. The Danish zoo that prompted international outrage by putting down Marius, a healthy young giraffe, and dissecting him in public, has now killed two lions and their two cubs to make way for a new male. The zoo said because of the pride of lions' natural structure and behavior, the zoo has had to euthanize the two old lions and two young lions who were not old enough to fend for themselves. It said that the lions would have been immediately killed by the new lion had they not killed the lions first. The four lions were put down recently after the zoo failed to find a new home for them. All four were from the same family. And last month, the zoo's scientific director, Bengt Holst, received death threats over the decision to kill Marius the giraffe, who was put down with a bolt gun before children were allowed to watch his body being chopped up, dissected, and fed to lions. This move shocked thousands of animal lovers around the world who had signed an online petition to save him. And now they're there is a petition online to ask the Copenhagen Zoo to stop killing perfectly healthy animals. You can find that at thepetitionsite.com.
All I really want to do is make a living singing songs, but how will I get on the radio when I cuss and swear and sing about loving women? I sing about loving women.
Made for lesbians by lesbians, The Lesbian Show on 102.7 CFRO has been providing music and news for almost 30 years.
You're my sister, you're my brother. When they ask you, you check other.
The Lesbian Show, Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m. For more information, contact lesbianshow at yahoo.com.
Just like me.
This year's Animal Advocacy Camp was held on March 22nd and 23rd at the Croatian Cultural Center and featured four fabulous keynote speakers. We're going to share some highlights from those talks today. Unfortunately, we do not have time to share all of the wise words from the camp, but we have prepared some highlights. This first clip is from Joanne MacArthur's opening keynote. Joanne is a professional photographer and photojournalist behind the We Animals Project. She was featured in the Canadian documentary The Ghosts in Our Machine, and you can visit her online at weanimals.org.
I'm a natural storyteller, insatiable curiosity, and I travel a lot. This is in India. And eventually, after years, the camera became my mostly all-access pass into the lives of others. I got to meet lots of amazing people, like this guy. He was combing his hair on the banks of the Ganges. I took a bunch of photos of him before I went up and said, "You're awesome, who are you?" My travels took me all over the place, including to northern India at the Tibetan Children's Village, where there are thousands of exiled Tibetans living in this area. But at the time I was taking photos, what's missing from these images that you just saw was actually my intention. I was taking photos, and taking is the word here. I was taking them for me, for my career, for my pleasure. But what happened is that, thankfully, I got politicized about things, and I wanted to take part in making the world a better place, and how could I do that? So I started using the camera for social justice and just turning things around in a way that made more sense to me. For example, at the Tibetan Children's Village, instead of just taking photos for me, I started taking them for them. And what I did was I came back to Canada, had an exhibit of these images, and all the money that was raised went back to the Tibetan Children's Village. So this felt a lot better to me. It was more on track. And I started shooting from a place of empathy. Everything that I looked at, I wanted to put myself in their shoes. And eventually, this translated to working with animals, which is my true love. I haven't always just loved animals. I've always had a concern for animals, and that's how the We Animals Project got started. I'm often documenting innocence with innocence. I find that really striking, and I just wish that, that day when I was photographing all the greyhounds and all the kids petting them, if we could just tell the children, if this dog doesn't run fast enough, they're going to kill the dog. What would they think about that? And would they speak up, and would things change? We're so dishonest. Wade Davis, who I'm obsessed with, this ethnobiologist and botanist, Wade Davis writes in his book, The Wayfinders, "A Canadian or an American grows up believing that homelessness is a regrettable but inevitable feature of life. The Pan, who are a tribe in Borneo, live by the adage that a poor man shames us all. Indeed, the greatest transgression in their culture is seeking, a concept which means a failure to share." So I liken the bulls to these people who, people who live on the street, and thousands of us walk by them every day, and we look, but we don't really see. And I think that's what we're doing with animals as well, and that's why we need to just crush speciesism, because it can't just all be about us. We have to share with one another and look after one another, but we have to extend that to other animals as well. And just like that homeless person that everyone's passing by and not really seeing, I feel like this is the same thing with this. This animal is the center of the spectacle, but we're not actually seeing the individual at all. We're seeing everything else. We're seeing what we want to see and what's convenient to us, but we're not seeing the individuals. So the question is, how do I get through to people with resistance against animal advocacy? I don't think that I do. I don't know that I push it too much. And I just try and stay the big picture with my work. And I did spend a bunch of years really focusing on my family. Or, why does my dad still eat pigs? Or change. Like, I just try and, like, live compassionately and put the information and my message out there and not focus on individuals. But I'm also not very good at focusing on individuals. And I think a lot of people aren't, because we're aggressive or judgmental. And especially with our families, it's just so easy for us to be that way. And so I have sort of pulled back. I'm really upset that so many people are wearing fur, especially in Toronto, and I'm upset. Like, I want everyone to go veg, but I'm not going to put my energy, because my energy is so precious, and I have a lot of work to do, and we all have a lot of work to do. So instead of focusing on people that I can't change, and why can't I change, and what's it going to take, I just try and step back and just keep doing good work, and they're on their own path, and hopefully they'll change along the way. But some people will disagree on that, you know, the step back tactic. Some people are really good at talking to their families, so if you're good at that, keep doing it. I'm not good at that.
Next up, we have another clip from the camp. This clip is from Sarah Dubois' speech. Dr. Dubois is the chief scientific officer for the BC SPCA, and she works with the BC SPCA Wild Animal Rehabilitation Center.
So the big question is, can scientists be advocates? And if we would have asked this 10 years ago, you would have gotten pretty much majority of scientists said, no, it's not a role for science to be an advocate. Science is neutral, or there's a set of facts only, to leave it up to policymakers to make these decisions for society. You would have been seen and labeled as not credible, you would have been labeled as a bit biased as a scientist, that you would be misinterpreting the facts because you have to prove a very specific outcome if you're a scientist with an advocacy agenda. But reality is science is not objective, because we're all choosing our own science. We have a reason, often a very personal interest, in the science we choose. For me, that was animal welfare science. So it's already validated. So to say that it's an objective pursuit of knowledge is really false. And I think if scientists aren't out there being roles as advocates, then there's a knowledge gap that's just filled in by misinformation. And we've seen this, of course, in the science world with the climate change issue, of course. It's a big one. So who would have known that this guy would have been the biggest advocate? You know, he probably didn't think it was going to happen in his scientist career, but he is. He's out there talking about the value of science, the value of evolution, and climate change. He's stomping around for those issues. So I think that more and more new scientists are going to become advocates, and that's really encouraging. So science advocates can be these essential intermediaries, because they have a very specialized knowledge in their field, but also majority of them, you know, they were funded, their education was funded by public dollars, they're often working for public institutions, they're there to serve the public good. So they should be in the conversation. So a scientist advocate can articulate a policy preference, but they should also be inviting non-scientists to really question the rationale for their actions and to be comfortable making recommendations in uncertainty. Science changes the world, we still don't understand a lot of it, so there's things that we have to be okay with being uncertain, and that our positions in science may change over time. And this is when you see science driving policy. But unfortunately, it can flip both ways. And we do get times when we have very different interpretations of the same science, and that is particularly the grizzly bear issue right now, you see. You have scientists who work for government who say, based on the data we collect, this is a sustainable hunt. We have scientists who work for other organizations that say, based on the data that we're aware of and modeling, the same modeling predictions, we don't believe this is, you know, a legitimate hunt. And that isn't even getting into the ethical argument. But based on two scientists, sets of science disagree. And then we have these other issues that get involved when policy drives science. And this is something we all need to be very aware of when science is no longer driving policy. So when we explore science only based on a mission, then we have some conflict here. And when politics decide which science gets presented, we start politicizing science. And so these, again, are things we really need to be aware of when we're presented with scientific arguments and where that science is coming from. If it is in fact driving policy, or is it itself being driven by policy? So a question I get a lot, also because for the SPCA, is why aren't we out there doing more? Why aren't we doing direct action activities? Why aren't we having a bigger role in advocacy? And the reality is the BCSPCA is a charity, so I just want to clarify what the difference between a charity and a nonprofit organization is, because it makes a difference, and then I'll point to a really recent example why. So as a We are exempt from taxation. We can give out charitable receipts. That's why often people will donate, is that as a motivation. That means that people deduct their donations from their personal income taxes. Whereas a group like nonprofit status, we use examples of Ferber Defenders. That was a group that once had charitable status but chose actively not to keep it for specific reasons. And advocacy, if you look at the laws that define charities and our activities, they say that advocacy is when you're trying to retain, oppose, or change a law, or any decision at any level of government. So that can be a municipal government, so a bylaw change. We advocate for bylaw change all the time, about people having spayed new bylaws, or having can't tell your dog bylaws, or don't feed wildlife bylaws. So that's actually advocacy to define under charitable registration. And, of course, provincial, federal levels too. And the restriction here is that charities can only put 10% of their efforts into this nonpartisan political advocacy. So these changes at government levels, even some of these, of course, industry-associated government groups, that's considered our activities are going towards that 10%. So we have a restriction as to how far we can go as an organization. The Canadian Revenue Agency is responsible for monitoring this. Some of you may be familiar with the recent case against groups like David Suzuki Foundation. And seven Canadian environmental groups are being audited right now by the Canadian Revenue Agency because they feel that their activities have gone above the 10% mark. So it's a very targeted audit. And they may find that they have to separate their activities into an advocacy organization that's a nonprofit and one that's a charity. And four step next to this some time ago, recognizing their challenges. So it's really important to know that there's certain roles for different groups, and some of them are governed by this. Our role in our mission statement, people don't always think of us working on other issues beyond just keeping a shelter in their local area. Of course, we are under the Prevention of Cruelty to Animal Act, the only enforcement agency tasked with that, uniquely in British Columbia. We have a humane education department, we run spay neuter programs, we have vet services, youth programs as well. We do have one wildlife rehabilitation center that is on Vancouver Island. But also, as a basis and foundation for our organization, is really the animal welfare science. So that's why I'm really excited about this new position to move animal welfare science into the forefront of what we do. And we do have a role for advocacy. We just last year created a Department of Government Relations. And we're starting to really ramp up and track very diligently so when we get audited, how much advocacy we're doing on behalf of animals. When we talk about wildlife protections, some of you guys are already familiar with things like the Species at Risk Act or the Migratory Bird Convention Act, Fisheries Act, the Wildlife Act of British Columbia, and its many, many regulations, including the Controlled Alien Species Regulation that prevents people from having backyard tigers. The Fur Farm and Game Act is one to mention as well, and some municipal bylaws. So these are the laws in place that are supposed to protect wild animals in our province, and some of them are federal, of course, too. But when you think about it, these are protecting species for the majority. They're designating, regulating how you can hunt and when you can hunt, or if you can at all. They're not really protecting the individual wild animals, in the case except for possession of wild exotic animals as pets. That's really the only prohibited form there, or feeding animals. So when we look at it, compared to some of the protections that are out there for other types of animals, wild animals are really not covered for a lot of potential situations. We have a criminal code. It doesn't discriminate. It does include wild animals. If we look at the code language, this is really hard to prove. So to prove willful intent and to prove unnecessary pain to a judge is very, very challenging. It's hard to get charges that are approved by Crown to go to this level. We had a situation, we had an individual who took a hockey stick to a family of raccoons in Victoria, and he said he willfully didn't want to kill the raccoons, he just wanted to get them off his property. So, unfortunately, this criminal code conviction didn't go through because we couldn't prove that he wanted to kill them. my cat being walked across the screen, but the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, filling in the blank, refers to wildlife in captivity. So very specifically, under the provincial law in British Columbia, we as an enforcement agency can only enforce the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act to animals that are in captivity. So free-range wildlife isn't considered here under this legislation. And unfortunately, some of you know even things like the Fur Farm Act and the Game Farm Act, those animals get all of a sudden labeled as no longer wildlife. They're considered agricultural animals. And when you look at the legal language of the Prevention of Cruelty to Animal Act, it says that any distress that results from a general and reasonable practice of animal management is excluded from any prosecution. You know, that unfortunately applies in our agriculture industry. So these are things that we just, you know, we can't prove distress when they say this is generally acceptable. And when you see the change a bit in codes of practice in the farm animal community, you say it's no longer okay to dock tails of cows, and that's in the new code of practice for the dairy industry. And that would be an offense under the act if someone, you know, did that and there's a charge on that. But for wildlife, there's no codes of practice for trapping, for hunting, for these things. And so we again have all of these gaps that aren't protecting our wild animals. There's another challenge beyond the lack of laws and the patchwork that they present, is that within our own movement, we use the definition of humane very differently. And I want to just point out there is a legal definition of humane. And I asked this to a law class at UBC a couple weeks ago. I said, what is the legal definition of humane? And unfortunately, what it is what the law says it is today. And that's all. But it's different from what the scientific definition of humane is. The scientific definition of humane says the death must be quick, causing the distress and pain. It's based on a species-specific valuation and only applies to that individual. So when you kill a wolf, and how it affects its pack isn't taken into consideration in this definition. So the physical and psychological considerations of, again, removing an animal from a wild pack wouldn't be considered. A good example of this is, you know, the fur trapping. So legally, they throw this word out to us all the time and say, well, these are humane traps. And we say, by the law, unfortunately, yes, they are. But are they scientifically humane? No. And very importantly, are they the definition of what society calls humane? And so there are these three definitions that we have to really use in context. And so when someone defends, you know, we have this discussion about how these arguments, how do we come back at these arguments, and someone says, but that's a humane trap, I'm doing this humanely. And you would say, well, that might be defined as humane under the law. That's not defined as humane by science. That's certainly not defined by humane by society.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO in the downtown Eastside, unceded Coast Salish territories. So some events, these events are happening in April, and these are film screenings in Vancouver. So the first one is on April 15th. 2014 at 7 p.m. and it's Animal Voices, which is us, and Liberation BC, and we're presenting the screening of the new film Live and Let Live. So this is a new film, so if you haven't heard about it, it's a feature documentary and examines our relationship with animals, the history of veganism, and the ethical, environmental, and health reasons that move people to go vegan. So grab all your non-vegan friends and come, and once again, that's April 15th, 2014 at 7 p.m. and it's at SFU downtown where our last film screening was, in the Fletcher Challenge Theater, and it's by donation, $5 to $15, but of course no one is turned away for lack of funds. And we also have a special guest, so the filmmaker will be on hand live to answer questions after the film, and we'll also have some tea and treats after so people can chat. And if you want to donate some baked goods, you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.org. and yeah, so that's April 15th. And then also, actually, I should mention this one sooner, April 7th, Sea Shepherd is presenting Eco Pirate, the story of Paul Watson, which is also a documentary, April 7th at 6:15 at the Van City Theater, which is located at 1181 Seymour Street in Vancouver. And it'll have Paul Watson via Skype after the film answering questions. So that is at like I said, Van City Theater, and that one costs $11 for non-members and $12 for members, and the proceeds go to Sea Shepherd Conservation. So that's, once again, April 7th. And then at the end of the month, April 29th, Speciesism, which we screened in February, is being screened by Liberation BC. So Tuesday, April 29th at 7 p.m., it'll be in the Alice McKay Room in the Central Library, which is 350 West Georgia. And, of course, if you haven't seen Speciesism, it's about our relationship with non-human animals. And it has parts from modern farms and what they're hiding. And it also has a bit about organic farms. And it talks to a lot of philosophy majors, people with philosophy backgrounds talking about animal rights. And so it's a great film. So bring
it's funny.
And it's funny. Yeah, it is funny. And we also interviewed the filmmaker, Mark DeVries, on one of our shows. So you can listen to that. It was a great interview. And he talked about a lot of the stuff that's actually not in the film. One point in particular, when he talks about when he went to that organic farm and how the turkeys only touch grass for about 30 seconds of their lives. And that's when they take the photo of them and put it all over their marketing. So really interesting interview. So I would recommend that. And then, of course, we have our weekly protest. So our chicken vigils, which is every Friday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. outside the Hallmark Slaughterhouse on Commercial Drive in Hastings Street. And then there's also the snowflake protest, which a lot of people don't know about because it's not often advertised. And it is also every Friday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. outside the snowflake, which is a complete fur store at 750 West Pender by Fur Bear Defenders. And also another weekly protest will be Brooklyn Clothing, which is 6:30 to 8:30 by Vancouver Animal Defense League. And
Fridays.
Yep, Fridays. Once again, a lot of stuff happens on Fridays. Somebody's Facebook status was like 6 demos on one day. So yeah, those are the events.
I've seen cities burn. I've seen tides turn right here.
was the song Barricade by the Canadian pop-punk band Courage My Love. It's from their 2011 EP entitled For Now. Earlier this week, I had a chance to interview Mercedes Arnhorn, who's the lead singer and guitarist for the band. Mercedes is a self-described vegan, activist, anarchist youth. Courage My Love is nominated for a Juno Award for Breakthrough Group of the Year this year, and they will be here on the West Coast this summer as part of the Vans Warped Tour. You can follow Mercedes on Twitter at Mercedes Arnhorn and check out her band Courage My Love at their website, ilovecouragemylove.com. Welcome to the show, Mercedes.
Great, thank you so much for having me.
So why did you become vegan?
Well, originally, I mean, my family was always vegetarian. Always. It started with my dad. He used to work in a meatpacking plant, and he just couldn't go back to eating meat after that. It was just too gross, and he just got disgusted at the thought of eating meat. So growing up, I was always vegetarian. And then originally when I decided to become vegan, it was because I was already part of the PETA Street team, and I'd seen a bunch of videos and learned a bunch of facts about the production of not only meat, but also animal products such as milk and cheese and all that sort of stuff, and about the horrible industry that surrounds that. Just so many facts that, you know, a lot of people love to argue with, but I just couldn't see any reason to continue. So that was originally what spurred me to make that choice. And then after I made it, I felt really healthy and energetic. I was really lucky at the time because my parents owned a organic restaurant, you know, with using all organic food. So it was pretty easy for me to make the change. The only time it became difficult was with my band when I would go on the road. And, you know, at 3 a.m. when you have to stop at a gas station or a service station, there really aren't that many options for vegans. So I've slipped up a few times on the road just because there weren't a ton of options. And I think that's something that North American society, it's becoming more of a acceptable thing to be vegetarian and vegan. You know, it's slow, but now it's sort of becoming a more acceptable culture. It's not as shocking. But, you know, there are some places, you know, when you go really far east or really far west or anything like that, where it's hard to find those options. And it's just like people are still so far back, you know, they can't imagine anything other than their meat and potatoes.
Yeah, actually, that leads me to my other question I wanted to ask you. So how do you stay vegan when you're on the road? Do you have any tips for people that might be traveling or are interested in going vegan?
There are a few different things. If you pack your own snacks, you know, like carrots or grapes or, you know, just vegetables for in the van, that's good. And then I guess you just have to be really, it depends on how hardcore you're going to go. Because I know some people aren't into eating certain kinds of bread because it's got egg in it and stuff. But that usually is only with really, I did a lot of research on this. It's usually only with, you know, bakery bread that's really good, like high quality bread. So most places you'll be able to get pita and hummus, but I'd say it's about not so much going out to restaurants, but going to grocery stores and getting your own food instead of just going out to restaurants and eating out. Cause you never know, like usually they'll have something, but not always. Like there's some regions where they just can't, it's hard enough to find, you know, vegetarian food, let alone vegan food. So I think the safest bet, you know, just go to a grocery store and get food for yourself. And then worst case scenario, you know, you just go to the restaurant to hang out and then you end up eating in the van or something like that.
Do it yourself. That sounds pretty punk rock to me.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, on your website, it says, for the Courage My Love site, it says, courage is saying what you really think. It's being unafraid of change, becoming who you really are. And you guys talk a lot about how your goal is to uplift and inspire people. So in this regard, how has your activism and veganism influenced your music?
Well, I definitely think that the messages behind animal rights activism and even just human rights are really the same basic principle. You know, it's speaking up for people and standing up for people or animals. Basically, just any living thing that doesn't have a voice and can't stand up for itself. So whether you're you know, trying to free activists or journalists who are thrown in prison for their beliefs, or whether you're trying to stand up for the rights of animals, you know, anyone who can't stand up for themselves and they don't have a voice, I think it's the same thing. Animals, humans, the same, you know, mission statement applies to both in a way. And just the same way we try to uplift our fans with our music and give them a message, you know, that if you're not happy with something, if you're not satisfied with something, you don't have to be complacent. You don't have to pretend to be content with the way things are. You know, that's even why our name is Courage, My Love, really. Because, I mean, we got it from this really old sci-fi movie, but in the movie, the father and mother, it's post-apocalyptic, so the world is basically just dying, and there's a lot of warfare and all that sort of stuff, and the mom and dad are standing over top of their sleeping kids, and the mom's crying, and the dad is comforting her, and just like, have courage, my love. And I thought, like, when we saw that movie, I just thought, wow, this applies to the youth today so much. Like, the world is changing around us. We have to deal with a lot of the mistakes that our ancestors, I mean, we inherited a lot of mistakes and a lot of problems, and it's up to our generation to set it right. And it takes a lot of courage to be different, and it takes a lot of courage to make change. So that's kind of where we got our name from. And I think that idea of just, you know, standing up for other people or standing up for things that you believe are right, even if a lot of people think it's wrong, that definitely makes its way into our lyrics and our music, for sure.
That is super inspiring. What movie was that, by the way?
It's called Things to Come. It's like a 1936 black and white sci-fi movie. It's really cool. I think you can find, like, you can find it somewhere online, I'm sure.
That's super cool. I also wanted to ask you, related to that, on Twitter, you referred yourself as an anarchist youth. So I know you're involved in some other campaigns and types of activism. What does an anarchism mean to you, and how is that connected to your life?
Well, I don't see it, I mean, because I used to do a lot of social justice and human rights in Kitchener, my hometown. And I mean, it's a little unfortunate because the whole band thing has kind of taken me away from that a little bit. You know, like, going on tour, I can't lead as many groups as I used to, and I can't be a part of as many groups. But I see it more as a blessing, because I can take the message of those groups and the message of, you know, equality and human rights and all that sort of stuff to our fans and to other places. So I'm basically just wanting to spread the message and raise awareness, because that's, you know, a big part of the battle. But I guess, like, anarchy to me isn't the, if you, it's not what you'd find if you look it up in the dictionary, you know. It's not just like, okay, well, screw the establishment. It's more, if you're not happy with the rules, then you make your own rules. If you're not happy with the way things are run, just do it yourself.
Because you created your own record label to release your music, Homeschool Prom Records, is that right?
That's right, yeah. The reason we did that, you know, it wasn't because we're like, well, screw you, big labels, or anything like that. It was more because we just really wanted a fail-safe way to protect our music. So we're signed to a major label, Warner Canada, but our label is signed, not the band. So we still make all the big decisions. We still have creative control of our music, and we protect our image and all of that. And that's basically our way of making sure that we're never pressured into doing something that we don't want to do.
Speaking of being pressured into things, I think it's pretty amazing that you're a female front woman in what's generally a male-dominated industry and genre. So have you faced any challenges working in this type of music, being female?
Thank you. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's challenges in the music industry no matter what, but I definitely think it's a lot harder for women in a different way than most people would think. I mean, it's becoming more common for there to be female-fronted bands, which is great. But, I mean, I've got a lot of horror stories where I've been kicked out of dressing rooms because, you know, the security guard didn't believe I was actually playing. Like, they thought I was a groupie or something like that. Yeah, and I've had to, you know, like, literally call our bassist and just be like, you know, can you tell the security guard to let me in? Tell him I'm actually in your band and stuff. So that's probably the worst that's ever happened. But I've also had it where a lot of people, it's more so the assumption that goes along with being a female artist, because people always assume that you get where you are because of your gender and not your talent. I find it's really easy to get people's attention, but it's really hard to gain their respect. So I guess in a way it's just sort of an issue that has come a long way, but we're definitely not done fighting it yet. And I think the best way to fight it is to just prove that there really is no difference. You know, good music is good music. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female. I mean, I know a lot of male musicians who are just as passionate about feminism as I am, and it's because they're sick of the bullshit. They don't want to have to feel like it's just a solidly male industry, because that's not the case anymore, and they don't want to feel like being pressured into being bigots, because they're not. They really support female musicians as well. So I think, I don't know, the best way to sort of fight the assumption that, you know, oh, well, you know, they're a girl band, how good can they be, is just be the best that you possibly can be. And it's like, maybe being a girl band got people to pay attention to you, but the way you're going to keep them hooked is just by being really amazing and just prove that it really doesn't matter. Like, gender should not be an issue. It shouldn't be the first thing that people notice about you.
And I think you guys are definitely doing that. You were recently nominated for a Juno Award. Congratulations.
Yeah. So thank you.
What was that like for you, being nominated for a Juno?
It's really cool. I mean, it's this huge honor, and, you know, we've never been nominated before. It's our first time. So we were just really honored. And there's a lot of other really awesome bands, and it's just cool because it's a really big deal in Canada, and it's cool to represent our style of music at the Junos and our message at the Junos, and just get the credibility that comes along with it. Because, I mean, a lot of my heroes are going to be there. We're flying up to Winnipeg in a couple days for the Junos, and, I mean, a lot of my heroes that I really look up to are going to be there. So it's just really cool to even be nominated. Like, if we don't win, I'll just be really honored that we even got the nod and that we get the credibility that goes along with it.
That's really great. What a nice attitude to have. We're running out of time here, but I did want to ask you a couple more things. So I was curious, are you the only vegan in your band, or are there other vegans in Courage My Love?
I'm the only one. And I, lately on the road, I've been kind of bad. I've been switching back and forth to vegetarian, vegan, vegetarian. Phoenix is vegetarian, and I've gotten her to sort of try vegan stuff, and she's pretty open-minded. And Lockwood, our bassist, is just like, he's kind of slowed down, and I think soon we'll get him to make the change to vegetarianism, but, I mean, he's a bit of a hard nut to crack, so.
How do you deal with that, yeah, when people you work so closely with might have a different lifestyle or different views about things than you do?
I mean, I've always believed you're never going to get someone to agree with you by bludgeoning them over the head with your beliefs. The best way to lead is to lead by example. So I just have to be accepting of what other people believe and, you know, what Lockwood believes. He's a great guy, and I think he has the same morals that I do. He's just not, maybe he doesn't feel as strongly about them to put them into action. But I think the best way to convert people to, you know, what you think is right is to just show them. And then if you lead by example, they'll follow you eventually.
That's awesome. So do you have any final words for our listeners? Any words of inspiration or wisdom to share with the world?
I guess, to any people out there who are passionate about anything, you know, like starting a band or really just doing anything, I guess my only advice would be, just make sure that you stay true to who you are and what you believe. Don't get pressured into doing anything just because someone tells you that it'll sell better or that, you know, other people will like it better. If you like it, that's all that matters, and you won't be the only one who does. I've always believed that integrity takes you way farther than just being popular in the moment. So if you really want a solid career, then just do what you want to do, and eventually the world will realize how awesome you are.
Mercedes is the lead singer and guitarist for the Juno-nominated band Courage My Love, and this summer they can be seen as part of the Vans Warped Tour, which will include a stop in the Washington area at the White River Amphitheater in June. You can check out their website for tickets and full tour listings, ilovecouragemylove.com. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mercedes.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Cooperative Radio in Vancouver on the downtown east side, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us next week's show. That's April 4th. We'll be interviewing Dylan Powell of the Marineland Animal Defense Campaign based in Ontario. Dylan was a speaker at the recent animal advocacy camp that we were speaking of earlier today here in Vancouver, and he'll be talking with us about coalition building with other social justice movements and how that can strengthen both ours as well as their movements. Also, we will be speaking with Marley of the Vancouver Animal Defense League about their current campaigns and recent successes. In the meantime, we want you to keep connected with us online. Visit animalvoices.org, where you can download our shows as podcasts, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/animalvoicesvancouver, and join us at Twitter at animalvoicesyvr, and please send us any suggestions or comments at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
We are closing the show with a song entitled Skin and Bone by our featured artist today, Courage My Love. This song is from their new album, Becoming, which is available on iTunes and in stores now. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Three little words, but the conviction is missing.
Oh, it's so easy to speak, but so much harder to listen.
We're at the end of the road,
but I felt haggard and old long ago.
And so I'll pour out my heart, but you know my heart isn't in it.
Well, it was there at the start, but now I'm scared to admit it.
I have turned into a ghost.
There's nothing left but the bones of before.